Hey guys, welcome back to the Not Without Merit podcast, episode 33. Middle of summer, still 6 weeks to go, but we're going to get through it together, I believe. I'm Jake, with me is Mike.
What is up, everybody? And joining us, as always, is Ben.
Hello.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back for another wonderful week of video games, which we have been playing quite a bit of. And there has been a very good one that I touched on a little bit last week, and I've spent... See, going back to that other problem, every game, I want to know how much time I've put into this damn game. Dead Cells, you're on the list.
Yeah, you can.
Wait, seriously?
Oh, yeah, you can look at your time total? In Dead Cells. Are you kidding me?
Total time played?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
It tells you how many runs you have. Are you talking about the stats guy?
Yeah, I want, like, complete total play time. Like, how many hours total?
Maybe it doesn't give you the hours. I know it tells you how many runs you've had.
Oh, well, that's a, such...
That could be anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour. Yeah, that's true. I would assume that the time would have been in there. I guess not. That sucks. Okay.
It's back on the list. Every game needs to tell me how much time I played it, for better or worse. So I'm going to assume 10. Probably 10 is a good baseline, closer to 15, somewhere between 10 and 15 hours. The game's great. It's so damn good. For a game that has, you know, I have not successfully completed the game once. I have gotten to what I just learned was right before I got to the area before boss 3.
You're in the third section. There's like sections of the game.
Right, and there's, I believe, is there four bosses and then a final boss? Or is the fourth boss?
I don't know. I've been told there are four. I don't know if that means there's four main and then a final.
Up to the, like, 75% point now, earlier today for the second time. So, yeah, the game's tough. Like, it's easily tougher than, I would say, Isaac. Enter the Gungeon, I would say it's on the same wavelength. I mean, it took me, like, 40 hours before I actually completed that game.
It requires you to put a lot of time in so that you can, like, start getting... abilities unlocked, right. Like upgrading once you can upgrade things, it becomes a whole different ball game.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'd say as far as like, it definitely rewards exploration. Yeah, there are the speed run doors, whatever you want to call them, that are at the start of each area that reward you. But at the same point, really, they're only rewarding you with money and your upgrade cells. It's not like you're, you know,
couple ability scrolls. Sometimes
occasionally abilities, but it's almost like a risk reward type thing. It's like, okay, I can skip over this whole area and skip all the potential upgrades and the ability chest and whatever else might come my way to get the speed run door. Most times I tend to kind of forego all of them. Maybe I'll get that first door because you can kind of. I think I've got that first area pretty down pat to where I can tear through it in the sub 2 minutes to get to it, but it's not really...
Second one's not bad either. Eight minutes?
Yeah, 8 minutes is two, but that's an area I'm really, like, habitually taking my time exploring literally every nook and cranny of every level, which the game, I mean, other than the speedrun doors, doesn't penalize you for, like, in any way. Like, if anything, it's encouraged.
No, it wants you to.
With how many secrets there are, and once you unlock additional, like, kind of core abilities that get you to be able to traverse to areas you weren't able to go to before. Like, it's definitely the roguelike Metroidvania done right. And I don't see myself slowing down on this game anytime soon. It's such a blast to play. I mean, I hit on all the main bases last week. You know, the gameplay's really tight. Graphics are nice. It's got a good soundtrack, good effects and everything. And it's just a blast. Moving on from that, I've been grinding out Attack on Titan 2. I am, I think, somewhere around 80% done with the story, and like I said before, it is essentially a retelling of seasons 1 and 2 of the anime. Like, damn near beat for beat. I could definitely see they spent most of the story is season 1. I would say like 70% is season 1, and then this final 30% is going to be season 2. So they definitely trimmed it down a lot. I feel like they probably could have trimmed it down more to even out seasons 1 and 2 because, I mean, without getting too spoilery, there are, I would say, equally as big revelations in season 2 as there are in 1, which I think, from what I'm playing, I don't think the season 2 revelations are going to get as much screen time as they should be, which is kind of ridiculous, but either way, it's, you know, it's that same retelling of the first two scenes of the anime. You know, like I said, the gameplay is still fun. It's still, you know, I can only get 2-3 hours in at a time for us to take a break, because at the end of the day, it is essentially a Musou game, so the repetition does tend to set in. The friendship system is still there and still annoying. Like, at this point, I've really just been kind of turning my brain off and just, you know, mashing through all those dialogues, because I really don't care, like, about building relationships of, like, the list. There's 30 people, at least, that I'm, like, managing all these friendships with, and it gets pretty annoying.
That seems really excessive.
Yeah, it is. Like, literally every character from the anime, they didn't leave anyone out at all. Like, they're all there. Even, like, side minor characters, you think, like, this person wouldn't be worthy of, like, maintaining a friendship. Nope, they're there, too.
If you're going to play those games, you kind of assume that they're going to fan service the hell out of it, right?
True. And dare I say, for whatever reason, if you wanted to play this game and not watch the anime, you get essentially, like, the story. Like, I don't feel like, oh, I can't believe they left out this, which, like I said, they've been trimming some losable storylines so far, so it's actually a decent way if you wanted to get caught up on this show and play a game instead of watch, well, I think it's like 35-ish episodes to get caught up on seasons 1 and 2, so it's not the worst way in the world to get caught up on the show. Like I said, it is a fun game at the end of the day. That movement is still really solid, and like the feeling of taking down those titans, it's very satisfying gameplay. But yeah, I'll probably wrap that one up this week and maybe check out some of the other stuff the game has to offer. But I mean, with those type of Musou games, it's really just once you beat the story, it's like, okay, now you can like grind your character to like max level if you really want to. But that doesn't seem like something I'm really interested in.
Is there any post-game stuff or challenges or any reasoning behind why you'd want to do that, or like New Game Plus or anything?
Like I said, there is another mode, literally called Another Mode, which is basically, because the story mode is you play as a brand new character. So it's basically you're essentially like a third person camera watching the show play out in front of you. The quote, another mode is what allows you to play as all of the main characters from the show. So I assume that's okay. Like, oh, I want to play as, you know, Mikasa and Eren and yada, yada, yada. And from what I gather, it's kind of just like generating missions for you. So it's kind of just like an endless mission grinder if you wanted to just do that.
Again, it gives people the ability to play as the characters right. They
and
want instead
the
of this,
has, you know,
this new
and
character.
You can co-op in that mode as well, so if you wanted to play with friends, because the story mode is like completely single player. But like, yeah, if you wanted to co-op with friends, you could do that. So I guess that's like the
other cool
way.
That there's co-op. I could see that being really fun in a game like that.
Oh, for sure. I mean, yeah, that's definitely one where multiplayer seems like a no-brainer. And you know, I personally haven't touched on it, but it seems, yeah, like that would be a lot of fun to play that game with other people. Moving on from there, started playing Windjammers. It was $1.50 on one of the recent flash sales, so that was easily an instant buy without question for $1.50. And I'm glad it was there, because I kind of forgot that was a game I had my eye on, just didn't end up buying. It's a literal one-to-one port of the arcade game, so it's not really any bells and whistles extra. It's got an online mode, which unfortunately I did not have a good time with. For the hour I tried to play it, I could not connect to a single person. Now, PSN was being kind of weird that day. My internet's been kind of weird the last week, so I'm not really to put all the blame on the Windjammer servers, but from what I looked up online, these servers have been kind of flaky ever since this game came out, so I'm not taking all the blame as well. So I'm going to give it another shot here probably in the next few days just to see, because I would like to play a game online. I mean, like I said, it's a one-to-one version of arcade mode, so it's if you're not playing online against people, you are playing against the computer. And while it is challenging, the computer is not that difficult, so yeah, the challenge would kind of dry up really quick if playing against the computer. And the final game I played this week is Dead by Daylight. Yes, the recent PS Plus title. When the servers were up, game was a lot of fun. I will definitely
I'm still amazed they don't prepare for shit like that.
Yeah.
It's back to normal now, but like Goddamn, dude, if you're going to release a game to the masses for free, please prepare. Oh, we didn't know it was going to happen. You didn't know that a gazillion people were going to get your game for free? Like, figure that shit out.
PS Plus numbers are public, and I believe it's around 10 million people have active PS Plus memberships. So, yeah, okay, obviously not all 10 million people are going to be playing your game at the same time, but you know what? You could do some math. Like, you know, maybe if 10%...
Prepare for more people than you're used to.
If 10% of those people want to play your game, that's still a million people. So that's a significant amount of to say, hey, maybe we should spin up some extra servers because we're going to get, you know, shit on with users.
Especially during an event, too. Like, they had a summer event going on at the same time.
Yeah, at the same time.
Good God.
So even more so of a reason to be like, yeah, let's keep these up and running. But I think both times it was, what, a couple hours, at least when we were playing. It was only down.
It wasn't that bad. We took a break for a little while and then came back and took a break and came back. We played like 7 or 8 hours, though, over the course of the entire weekend, if not more.
It's a lot of fun. I think the tutorial is a must, especially for...
They don't tell you enough.
I mean, when I played it, the only thing I feel like they forgot was the vaulting and the kind of object.
And pallets.
Yeah, and the pallets. The pallets and the vaulting. So it's really, they touch base on basically all the mechanics. It's got a very deep, like, kind of RPG system when it comes to upgrading the characters. Like, this, I would say, it goes way deeper than, say, Friday the 13th's kind of perk and RPG and leveling system. Yes, there are multiple survivors, each having their own, you know, abilities and, you know, special kind of characteristics. People are better at certain things than others, which it doesn't seem to be, like, hard numbers for that. It's just kind of like a phrase of like, this person can do...
What do you mean?
Well, isn't all the survivors, like, are they all like level?
So
like,
all the survivors are... No. All the every survivor is just a skin.
Okay,
it's
so
just
it's
a matter of what abilities you have
because
on.
When I read the
100%.
Descriptions, it made it feel like that. Oh, this person is better at this, or is that their specialty perks?
No, whatever the perk says. That's what makes you. All. Unlike the killers, every single survivor is just a skin.
It's basically, who do you want?
The goal is to essentially get every survivor to 40 so that you have everybody's teachable perks, and then you create the ultimate survivor with whatever skin you like.
And then at that point, it's just pick the character.
It's blood web farming.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, eventually, the goal is to get all the perks on all the characters, so you're going to blood web farm anyway.
Right. Absolutely. But, it's a lot of fun game. I find it strange that there's no native chat in the game. I feel like that makes the game...
I think that's one of the things they were going for.
I mean, I understand. I guess in a way that us playing it, well, you know, it's 1v4.
We break the game when we play with friends. Like
most of the times in a party of at least three, or if not a full party of four. And
yeah.
Yeah, I guess it is an advantage of saying, like, oh, he's about to get me. But also in the
big
same
time.
In the same way... The game tells you, like, if someone gets downed or someone gets put on a hook. Like, that's not hidden knowledge that I only knew because you said, oh, he hooked me. Like, that's easily
No, that's knows. True. But if you said that he was chasing you, so then I had nothing to worry about and I can just work on a generator, that gives me all the time in the world. That's not something I would know
randoms. If the killer was just face camping you and standing at your body. Like,
don't come to me. Yeah.
We got
a lot of that, too, which is part of
PS
Plus. That's the
other
issue.
A lot of new players that, you know, haven't really figured out how to
don't
play
understand.
Properly, but it was a lot of fun. Yeah, like I said, there was definitely some server hitches. You know, there was some lag spiking, but it is the killer is the host of each game, so you're at the mercy of that person's internet. Fortunately, you kind of get to see the ping of the lobby before the game starts. So, you know, if it's bad, you can always bounce out. But it seems even sometimes when it was good, we were still getting some lag. But again, that was very infrequent. That was only like. Like a couple times out of the dozens of games, you know, we played over the weekend. But it's fun. I'll stick with it. I don't know how much I will play, like, by myself, because it definitely was a lot
It's not as much fun playing Survivor without
friends.
Yeah,
I would say, if I played solo, I would obviously... The killer seems to be the only way to... if you were going to play by yourself to, like, play that game. I don't think I would play...
Andy fucking loved Killer. He destroyed people his first couple games. You should try it, too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I do play... It's probably going to be one of those days. Like, you know what? I'm in the mood to do that. So, I'll, you know, if I get the itch to play that game, it'll probably be, let me play as Killer to kind of figure that out. But
Yeah.
It's fun. It's a good time.
I'm glad you're enjoying it, though. Yeah. I'm glad you've had fun.
Yeah, I'll definitely be sticking with it for the foreseeable future. It'll be that good kind of multiplayer game that's always kind of be there. It's like, okay, if I don't play for, you know, a few weeks or something, I'm not going to feel like I'm going to instantly become bad at the game or feel like I missed out. You know, I can always just pick back up and kind of get right back to it.
But and we always, I always have parties running of that game, so it'll be good to have full survivor teams finally.
Yeah, absolutely.
With you guys filling in and out.
It was definitely like the most fun playing in like a group of four. But
Yeah, I had a ton of fun playing that.
That's it for me, Ben.
You only gave it one chance.
Yeah, Mr.
I gave it two chances.
Mr. 30 minutes of Dead by Daylight.
Wait, when was your second chance?
I played
the second
two
game
games.
You played.
Yeah.
Oh my fucking unbelievable.
I'm sorry, but if I'm sitting there mashing X and it just immediately kills me, I'm
you got really unlucky that he found the killer found you first both times and it put a really sour taste in your mouth, which I totally understand, but that's not like every game. And I get found first all the time and escape. No, I understand.
Brandon got caught.
I get it.
It was like three games in a row he was like first one dead.
Yeah. And Andy got caught a bunch first and juked the killer around and then managed to escape because we were doing shit. I think it's a give-and-take game, and especially in the beginning, and Mike can attest to this now that he's put more time in. When you start and you have nothing,
so
like
hard.
You have no perks, it's
so
really
hard.
Fucking hard. It's almost impossible
to
not
get
killed.
Jump back in for a quick second. Yeah, that game is strange where, as a survivor, it gets easier the more you play. Because... Like
oh, 100%.
Said, with all the perks you unlock and you get, you know, consumable items and such and everything and so on and so forth. Yeah. Starting as, like, your base character that has nothing, you know, you're basically, like, you know, basically unequipped for the fight. So it is something that, yes, give it like, 4 or 5 hours before, like, you really make your final judgment on the game. Because, yeah, once you unlock more and more perks, it gets a lot easier. I think that's... not the best way for that game to be. I feel like starting...
How else would they... I agree, though, but how else would they have done it?
I mean, I guess...
Because Friday was the same way, but this game is just way more reliant on perks.
I would, maybe just, like, when you start out, you know, start out with maybe 2 or 3 perks, and you have...
Well, you start with your... You start with the 3 perks that that character has.
True.
And you can...
It's true. I guess the randomness.
It's a dice roll in the beginning.
The
it's tough.
Of it too. It's like you could get some really good perks.
Oh, the RNG
of
the blood web? Yeah.
So, like, that could really make it easy for you. Or if
you got some really good rolls.
Yeah, like, I got lucky on a couple, so it's like, yeah, it's been easier for me. But, like, for someone that maybe doesn't get those rolls, it's like, wow, they're going to even have a tougher road. So
it's tough.
It's a tough.
It's a give and take game.
Because, yeah, you don't want to have it too heavily balanced either way where it's like, okay, the killer is impossible to best or... The survivors, it's like, oh, it's damn near impossible to lose. Like,
but when you start the game, it feels like the killer is too overpowered.
Right.
Like, it feels like you can never win. And then once you get some perks and understand how to move around, then you understand how to win.
Absolutely. But, yeah, Ben, I know you did have a rough time with Dead by Daylight, but what else have you been playing?
I did finally platinum Fallout Shelter. That was...
Yay!
Yeah.
Congratulations.
100 hours later.
I don't know.
Did it really take you that?
90 hours.
Was it really 100 hours?
90.
Oh, 89 my God. You should... You're a madman for it not using just, like, the time ability. You could have set it a day forward and gotten your dailies or whatever you needed, like, instantly.
Oh, no. It's... That... It would have been a more of a waste of time to do that, like keep changing my clock back and forth, than to just log in, do my shit, and log out and do something else. But this game really did show me how much time we waste, just in life in general, over small shit. So the fact that it took me 90 hours of platinum this game, and I feel like I really didn't play it all that much.
I was about to say, how much of that 90 hours were you actively focusing on the game and not just watching TV or... talking with us or something else of that nature?
Well, I mean, I would say there was some days it would take like a half hour to an hour to depending on if my search parties got to their quest or if my, you know, lone wanderers were coming back or going out or whatever, if they run into any random location. I mean, those take time to get through. You have to search your way through a building, go through fights and everything. It's a whole thing. But once you get up to 200 settlers or whatever, your vault dwellers, that's where it kind of starts getting time consuming, because you can build gyms and bars and weapon centers, and they raise your, you know, special attributes. So when you've got a room of six people maxed out, you got to find other rooms to put them in, and it just becomes this insane juggling act. I think I only got one character maxed out on all special attributes before I platinumed. I sent them out into the jungle to go get me stuff, but they're probably dead by now. I haven't checked in on the game since I platinumed it.
Well, yeah, there's no point to play it now.
Still on my PlayStation, so that's cool. Yeah, there's seriously, I've got zero reason to play this game anymore.
I mean, that's how those games are. Like, you just reach a point and you just kind of stop. Like, that's how those, there's no really end to those games. You just kind of like, okay, I don't want to play this anymore. Done.
And the only reason you played it as much as you did on console as opposed to phone is because there was an end goal of the trophy.
Those are the trophies. It's a lot easier to do on the console because you're not scrolling as much.
I'd say you'd probably be pinching and zooming and
you would get carpal tunnel playing this on a phone.
Especially for as many hours as you did.
For doing that 90 hours, it would have taken longer because you don't see as much on the phone, so you'd be scrolling more. Easily it'd have been over 130 hours doing all this shit. That's it for Fallout Shelter. I still got to delete it off my PS4. I don't know. I think I'm holding on to it for sentimental reasons at this point, but that game is done. The other game I played this week is Madden 19. You may remember such previous pods where I ranted and raved about how I think this game is going to be awesome. Well, I was wrong. I don't know where the fuck to begin with this game, so I'm going to start with the good. Real
Long
player
shot,
motion.
Part two. Oh.
I am never going to touch that, and I'll get to that later. Real player motion is a nice addition. The players moving based on their size and weight, it actually like means something now, so I've yet to see
Kelvin. That's really cool. I didn't know they added that in there.
It's finally nice because a player like Kelvin Benjamin, who's 6'5", 240 pounds, or Evan Engram, who's 6'5", 250 pounds, they used to get scoop slammed by 190-pound corners just on a whim. Just here he is, boom, in the stomach, lift him in the ground, slam him. Now they get it hit, they stumble, and they just the motion, the weight, everything, you can see it. The player falls forward. You actually feel like your character has some weight to their movements. It's like, seriously, like Madden 19, it was like when you're playing like No Mercy and you come running out of Stephanie McMahon and then you hit Undertaker with a powerbomb.
Yeah.
So
it just seems like with a game like that, because they put it in many other games. It seems like with a game like that, that should have been a feature that was in there a while ago.
Right, and I think that's just the Frost Bite engine getting more use at this point. NHL 19 is going to have it. With the real player, I think it's what we're calling real player motion is in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Good, and you could tell. Like when we played the NHL beta, you can feel the difference in the types of players you were seeing.
It's a beautiful engine. I'm glad that they're using it for other things now as well.
Absolutely. I'd like to see more. The other thing I liked is the scheme boosts that your players get by playing in the scheme of your team. So your coach has, he wants a deep threat receivers on his team. If you get a deep threat receiver, then they get a little boost on their attributes, and when they're training, they get boosts. And when the team has an overall scheme, like ranking, like I think mine right now and my little test franchise is 92%, you know, you get boosts on those players because they're playing in a familiar system, which is good. It's how it should be. That's a nice addition. Player progressions as well. Every player's got different archetype. You get your EXP point that you can spend on which archetype, and then they'll randomly get a boost to any number of attributes within that archetype. I like that. That's cool. That makes progression so much easier, managing the roster so much easier. I've spent so much time going through a 53-man roster trying to assign EXP points to a 50 different attributes, and it was just ridiculous. This is, and it's like after every game, it's like these three players, you know, leveled up, I guess is what you can call it. Where do you want to put these points? And boom, you pick it and you're done. Great addition. I like the addition of slot receivers and power backs on your depth chart. So you're no longer, you know, fucking around with your depth chart, doing formation subs all the time to get, you know, your Edelmans, your Jarvis Landrys, you know, inside, get matched up against a linebacker. It's now done for you. You're not fiddling with backup running backs to try and get your big boy in on goal line carries. They're just going to be there now. It's so much nicer to have that at your fingertips. It's just there. Now we're going to go to the bad portion.
Say, I'm waiting to see what's so bad, because it feels like these are a lot of positive changes.
These are positive changes. This is where it's bad. The pass defending AI, they're psychic. They know exactly what your quarterback
we're back
is doing.
To that again, huh?
When they're throwing it. I've had numerous occasions when a defender has his back to my quarterback and he's looking downfield.
He throws the hand behind him at the perfect moment while looking in the complete opposite direction. Classic Madden.
Swat it. Or yep. I've had them jump and like 180 spin, catch it in the air without even turning their head. They just know where that ball is at all times. I've slowed replays down where, like, I can see, like, the middle linebacker's running, you know, following the tight end. He's got his back to the play. As soon as I hit the pass button, you can see the linebacker, like, hover, kind of, to where he knows where he's got to be. And then he makes the play on the ball. It's disgusting to see. It's so aggravating. There's you cannot get away with anything. And it's an interception half the time.
Say, have you tried the pass defense slider? Just adjusting that enough?
Oh, yeah, I have messed with sliders like crazy, and nothing is working. These two kind of go together. Handoffs are a complete clusterfuck. 25% of the time when you hand off to your running back, he gets this weird stutter step out of the exchange, and he's pretty much dead to rights. He's dead. There's nowhere
to go. So basically
he
collides with the quarterback every time?
I think that's how the game is treating it. The problem is they've built in this delay. Like, after you get the handoff, there's this half-second delay where you really can't do anything. You have to follow the motion of the running back.
Mm-hmm.
And I have seen defenders not get blocked, just walk through the offensive line. Like, they're like, oh, hey, sorry to get in your way, sir. Let me move. And just, you're dead. There's, like, nothing you can do. I've had my quarterback get sacked on a play action before he got to the running back to fake handoff to him. That's how crappy the offensive line play is in this year's game.
Disappointing.
The player speed threshold is super messed up. So I've had like 93 overall speed guys with my burst on, get chased down by 81 overall speed linebackers. Just ridiculous nonsense where you got daylight, like there's no, you can see no one around you, and then out of nowhere from behind you to the right, you get chased down by some slow safety. It's awful. Like, and I've checked speeds. It's not a stamina thing. It's not a speed thing. It's just rubber band Madden overcompensating. Franchise mode, barely touched. Same menus, same scouting. A copy paste, awful. Just a toss in a new back ring splash where I can see Matt Patricia sitting at a desk with the pencil behind his ear, talking on the phone, looking on his computer.
It's more realistic that way.
I don't buy it. I don't think he uses computers. I think he's a notepad, pencil kind of guy all the way. So that's completely false for Madden. I'm kidding, by the way. I'm pretty sure he knows how to use a computer.
Hey, you never
know. He's a rocket scientist, after all. I'm not a Ultimate Team guy, so I can't comment on that. I'm sure it's fucked as well. Pay to win. And then, Lego's mentioning Longshot. I'm not going to touch Longshot. I'm not going to give them the satisfaction of them seeing when I played that. Because, it was fine last year. You tried something new. It was stupid and cliche, but it wasn't terrible. But you have an absolutely broken game here in front of us. Don't give us Longshot 2. Don't waste your money on that.
I don't want to spoil it for you, but I'll tell you a secret after watching a bit of Longshot. The Longshot is bad too.
It's the same story, but it's for the other guy.
Yes, and you know how you had dialogue choices and that affected things?
Yeah.
Yeah, those are all gone now. It's basically cutscenes. It's cutscenes with some practice drills mixed in. It is all the dialogue choices are gone. It's just straight cutscenes now.
How much money do you think it cost EA to do all of that? I'm going to say it's well over $1 million.
Well, you got to think too.
To produce Longshot.
This is why that happened, because I'm sure last year they probably worked on Longshot for a couple years. So it's like they had time to mold a nice story and add a bunch of shit into it. And then they're like, "Oh shit, it's good. Now we only have 1 year to put out the sequel." And
I wouldn't say it was
that's
good,
what happens.
But...
Well, I mean, for what it was. It was good for what it was. For having no expectations, it was fine. It was a fine, like, four or five hours.
Team putting out a single-player, story-driven game.
It was as good as I imagined they would make something like that. It had no place.
Yeah. It should have been its own $5 digital add-on.
They should have just taken another 2 or 3 years and be like, here.
Now you're saying you want them to charge for it?
What's that?
To charge for it?
I mean, I wouldn't.
I want it to be optional.
That's fine, but that don't make me pay for something that's garbage.
True, but I mean, there's at that point people would be like, why can't Ultimate Team just be its own thing? Because that's all I play and that's all I care about. Or online.
I mean, that's called a card game. Yeah, they can make Ultimate Team, like EA's Ultimate Team, and have it incorporate every fucking sport and just make it like one game, just a card game.
I mean, that's probably.
People would fucking nut off for that game.
Seems to be what, at least as far as most of their sports games goes, the main focus. Like, Ultimate Team is a juggernaut. I'm sure there's a decent amount of franchise and just traditional online players, but I mean, those card games keep coming back for a reason. It's because they're printing money with them.
FIFA's where that's at,
oh, sure,
but I'm sure Madden's not very far behind.
NHL's got their own too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
NBA oh yeah, no, I'm just saying. Like, I don't think Madden's very far behind FIFA, but FIFA's really, really up there.
Oh, I've got no issue with those game modes. I think they're great. I think it drives the revenue for that game up and should open up opportunities for them to, I don't know, pay for a little better programming. A little better quality assurance.
A little better story.
I think Mike's right, though. But I think Mike hit it on the head. It's the same thing they're doing with Assassin's Creed. Take a little while off, make a really good game. Oh, shit, it's been a year. We have to make another one. No, you don't.
And now look,
like,
oh, it's
maybe
like a copy-paste of last year.
It's Odyssey. Yeah, it's fucking copy-paste, but new location and new person. Yeah, with Madden, they could have...
Exactly.
I kind of want to play it just because the location. It's not a day one. Right, exactly. It's not a day one like Origins was, but they could have maybe left Longshot out for a year or two and then brought it back and then made it more hype or whatever. It's companies have this thing of like, oh, it was good. Let's rush it out again. Yeah. I really hope Santa Monica Studios doesn't do that. I mean, I don't think they have any intention of doing that with God of War. But,
no. You
know, you see an amazing game and you're just like, please, just fucking take your time. That's why when games get delayed nowadays, I don't care. Like, right. If you're going to give me a higher quality product, fine.
It's never
they just
a bad
have
reason.
A problem of announcing too early right now. That's the biggest problem.
Yeah,
so that's my rip on Madden. But I have to tell you about a dream I had.
Oh, boy.
Last night, I dreamt that I was playing, like, a Japanese RPG, kind of like a Yakuza game, but it wasn't Yakuza. In the game, I was sent out to look around. Now, mind you, this is all first person, because this is my dream. I'm the one dreaming this. So it's like the usual check out this area type of thing. I had like a little sidekick with me showing me around, and for whatever reason, I think it was a person, but it also might have been like a ghost or something floating around with me. I can't remember. But then I overheard some talking in this swimming pool area, and we went into the area, and at a table was Kiryu from Yakuza and Joker from Persona 5.
Ooh, good combination.
They were BSing with some other Yakuza members just at this table, and, you know, they were all
looks like these Japanese games are getting to you.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure I could also hear Morgana talking somewhere out there, and I'm pretty sure I saw...
that fucking annoying voice, you hear it everywhere.
I know, that's ingrained. But yeah, I'm pretty sure Ryuji is at the table, and then I just remember just thinking at that moment, In my dream, I'm kind of like freaking out, like thinking of the possibility of a Yakuza Persona crossover game. And,
oh my god!
And I remember in my dream saying, "Can you smell that? Can you smell it? That's the smell of money."
And a game
you knew you
take
were onto
400
something.
400 hours to complete.
Yeah. Yeah. No shit. I got to start feeding you some more Japanese games. I've got some interesting ones that you might like.
Yeah.
Maybe more off the beaten path. You seem to be getting into them, which is cool.
They're fun. And then
yeah, they're very weird too.
And then Joker pointed a shaky gun at me because we weren't Yakuza and we had to leave. And that's when I woke up.
Nice, solid dream.
But that's it for me.
Let's make that game happen.
I'd
some
play
money.
It.
I'd play it. Hell yeah, I'd play it. All right, so it's going to be a lot of building off what you guys talked about, and then so Dead Cells, building off what you talked about, Mike, I really like that you can create your own builds as well. Like, I've made trap builds where I go all range, where I just throw them down, sit back, let them do all the work. There's really cool combinations of, like, re-rolling stats on weapons, so if you have a firebomb or like a freeze blast, make all your weapons do 100% damage against freeze. And then like the first boss on one build I had was a full trap build with 100% on freeze, and I had frost blast. I melted that guy in under 30 seconds. Like, I just stood there, let the traps do all the work, froze them in place, and it was over. So I really enjoy the kind of builds that you can make and do the up close and personal with the bleeds, and it's cool. And I like, I'm enjoying all the items that they're really throwing at you, because in the beginning it feels very barren, or at least I felt it seemed that way. And then, I don't know, a couple hours in, once you've unlocked some stuff, you really start to be able to maximize your builds. And like, you were saying, Mike, too, once you gain more abilities and things, the game becomes, well, I don't know if it becomes easier, but it becomes more manageable. You can really skirt through the first areas much quicker without having as much of an issue when you first start. They have the... I unlocked the daily challenge thing. Have you beaten that yet? Or have you beaten a daily challenge? Yeah, those are tough.
They're very tough.
Timed level where they give you the whole map, so you can make your choice on how you want to get there, but you upgrade along the way, and then at the end you fight... I don't know if it's always the first boss. That's who I fought in my daily when I got to the first boss, but he kicked my ass really quickly. Like, I was not prepared for that. So I'll be interested to kind of mess around with that. Does that give you anything, or is it just kind of for the satisfaction?
I imagine it's probably just, yeah, like a leaderboard type of thing. I don't know if there's any, I know there's a trophy for beating a daily challenge, but other than that, like, yeah, I don't think so.
Hmm. Okay. And like you said, as you get more abilities, you can access different areas. Like, there's each area seems to branch off into two locations, and some of those locations you can't get to until you have certain abilities or until you can do certain things. So I like the variety of it. The Metroidvania aspect is really cool to add into a game like this. Rogue Legacy did it pretty well, but this really nails it on the head. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a really good Metroidvania at its core. You take all the rogue elements, it's an amazing Metroidvania. Definitely. They'd have to expand the maps, but still, it's a really well-done Metroidvania. Then you add in the rogue elements, and it becomes a whole new thing. I think my longest run, I made it to the third boss. That run was like 35 minutes, 40 minutes, something like that. It's tough, man. That game is really hard. Did you face the enemy in the castle, Mike, that has like a flame thing on the end of his blade and just melts your health?
Yes.
I didn't even know what was happening. I just stood there and got caught in that and died. Yeah. There's some really hard enemies they throw at you, and there's some really interesting paths you can take, like items that do 100% damage but also deal 100% damage. And I tried one of those one time. I died in two hits because it's so strong. There's
so
nothing you can do. Well, those items are so, like, you can melt people with it, but as soon as you take a hit, half your health's gone. So I feel like that's either a build for you need a bunch of health, or you need the ability to heal a bunch of times with the flask.
Or have just, like, a ranged build where you can stay far away from...
Yeah, that would work, too. Yeah, but somehow I always seem to get hit at least once or twice, even with a ranged build, because enemies pop up into the ground, and there's a lot of bullshit hits in there when you can't see what's going on, because...
Oh,
the screen can get kind of clustered
sometimes. Yeah, it can get a little crazy when there's a lot of enemies in action.
Yeah. Like those pirate enemies in the Stilt Village, their bombs do insane amounts of damage. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to see them sometimes if there's a bunch of enemies standing around you. So sometimes you'll just miss to jump over it and, you know, a quarter of your health is gone. That's a cool area, by the way. I like that they introduced the idea of actually going into, they call it like, or the background, or kind of
like
the transition,
like alternate rooms,
but
essentially
it's cool. Yeah. They did a really good job. It's a really well designed game, and the music is really, really good. The further you get in the game, the better the music's getting, which just makes me more excited for Endgame. More Dead by Daylight, I guess. Besides the stuff you guys talked about, there's an event going on right now where... I talked about it last week, where there's a special survivor skin and
when
a special killer skin.
By the way,
that ends next Tuesday.
Okay.
So you've got some. You're already at like what?
Like
70. I would say
70 something.
See, your thing is you don't even have that character though. That's what's funny. Yeah, you can unlock her with currency, but the killer one. So that's what I'm going to talk about now. So I worked on the killer one. I started with 4. I did this all in one night, by the way. I started with 4. I played Hag and I played Hillbilly. They are really strong with the amount of perks that I have on them. I can't believe more people don't play Hag. Like,
yeah,
it's mind-blowing to me.
She seems to be far and away the best killer.
She's so strong. I put hexes on her. I put a trap on the hex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they go to the trap. Boom,
yep,
there I am.
Easy kill.
I had a stretch of 4 games where nobody escaped. And no generators were started. Not once in any game. It was the grossest streak I've ever had. I jumped up from rank 18 to like rank 13 in very, very short amount of time. And then I played Hillbilly, or not Hillbilly, Cannibal. So it was my first time playing Cannibal. He has like this 180 style chainsaw thing. First of all, it lasts way too long because if you miss somebody, you're continuing to do the animation while they run away. And if you hit something while you're doing it, be prepared for a 5-second him raging around and fucking doing nothing. Because
I guess they gotta have to balance it out some way for how powerful that
is. Oh yeah, 100%, 100%. I got used to it. It worked out. I got my highest blood point game ever. I got 125,000 blood points in one game. It was a base of 70 or 80, and then with the barbecue on top, with the barbecue invitation, it was just insane. Yeah, it was. So his two perks that I was running, which were Thrill of the Hunt and Barbecue and Chili. Thrill of the Hunt is a perk for any killer. They both stack blood points. So every time you stack, so barbecue stacks with every time you hook a new survivor, it stacks. So it stacks up to 4, and once that happens, you're gaining like 15 or 20,000. It's gross. You gain a lot of blood points off just that perk. It was weird to get used to because I wasn't used to running it. So every time I hooked somebody, I had to remind myself, hey, look around for a couple seconds and see if you see anybody. I noticed if you're hiding next to – I've always been told if you hide next to a generator, it's harder to see. I can see why, because your outline is the same color red as the generator is red. So if you're hiding behind or next to a generator, you're harder to detect than if you're, like, running around or moving or something like that. So I would say that's definitely a thing against barbecue is stand next to or be working on a generator. Like, I don't know. Kind of be behind it so that your ore is not right. seen as well. It was definitely harder to detect some people. That perk is still really strong, but depending on who you're running it on, by the time you get halfway across the map to where they were, they're not there anymore if they're smart. So it's a strong perk in knowing where people are, but having run it myself now, it's not as strong as you'd think when you're playing Survivor, when he just beelines you. That's that's where the rough part comes in. But I'm having a lot more fun playing Killer, especially since I never played Killer a whole bunch, and now that I'm actually having full groups with you guys and my PC friends and stuff like that, I'm getting full groups of Survivor, so I'm not wanting to play Survivor as much when I'm by myself, so I've been playing a lot of Killer, and it's really, really, really fun. More progress in Grand Kingdom, which I'm just grinding away at. More progress on Mega Man X. I should be done with 3 soon. Those games are harder than I ever thought. Also, I remembered that I mentioned it to you, Mike, but I don't know if I ever mentioned it on the podcast that I actually finished all the Dark Souls DLC and I'm trying to run through New Game Plus and Plus 2 for the Platinum on the side. But now I know why when you told me that DLC was unforgiving. It was that final fight against what's-his-face, the dragon.
Calamite.
Is Calamite, yeah. That's not a fair fight at all. Like, if he does one of his fire breath on the ground attacks and you're just not far away enough, have fun. You're dead.
No, you're dead.
Like, it's... And to anticipate that move is really tough. That's why speedrunners always blow my mind with that shit. Like, mm-hmm. it's... that was really hard. That was probably the hardest DLC for any Souls game I've done next to Bloodborne was harder. That final fight in Dark Souls was the hardest, though, probably of any fight I've ever done. But yeah, it was a light week for me. A lot of Dead by Daylight just because of the event that was going on. So I just put in a lot of time. I'm debating if I want to start Mafia 3, but Yakuza comes out in 14 days. So we'll see. But yeah, that's it for me.
All right. And with that, we will jump right into the news, in which Fallout 76 had its own little Q&A panel at QuakeCon over the weekend. Not going to get into every single detail because it was about 90 minutes long.
Come on.
There's a lot there, so I would suggest either watching the panel, which is available online, or there is a nice little info dump on the Fallout subreddit. And I'm just going to go over some of like the kind of bigger, more notable things that were revealed. First off, as far as player customization goes, can be done anytime during the game, including changing your gender. So don't feel like you have to be locked into the look of your character for the entire experience. There is no hard level cap as well. Now, when you hit level 50, your kind of special stats won't increase anymore, but you'll still be able to like unlock perks in the skill tree and everything. But yeah, there is no hard level cap. It seemed to be that the majority of the questions centered around PvP, which, you know, it being a very, you know, volatile subject and something being, you know, not only is this game brand new as on its own, but people always wonder how, you know, when you say there's going to be PvP in the game, how it's going to work. Essentially, it's kind of baked in as part of the game. They did state before that, you know, it will be in the matter of maybe 20 to 25 people in kind of each server. So it's, you know, not going to be some crazy all-out, you know, like, you know, GTA, you know, style, you know, massacre going on. But basically how PvP works is anytime you see someone on the map, you can start shooting at them. You will do damage, but it's like very minor chip damage. It's not something that's going to be like, oh, man, you sniped a dude in the head from 100 yards away and, you know, he's instantly dead. Like, no, it doesn't work that way. If that person decides to turn around and start firing back at you, then PvP is on, you know, regular, you know, damage to each player. May the best man win. If, however, that person that is chip damaging you doesn't let up and you don't return fire and you die, he basically gets a huge bounty put on his head that everyone in that server gets to see. So he becomes basically what they're calling a wanted murderer. And that person now cannot hide on the map in any way, shape, or form. So when sneaking, if they're in their base, anything, they are, you know, target number one on the map. And if you kill them, the bounty is paid out of the murderer's own stash. So it is really a hard penalty against trying to force PvP on someone. And not to mention, if that person does kill you as well, you can ignore them, which means for the rest of the time you are both in that server, that person cannot see where you are on the map at all under any circumstances.
Can we rename this the asshole tax?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's unofficially, you know, what it's going to be. Yeah. So, you know, everyone will be on the map normally at all times. It is not a pinpointed exact location of where you are. It's just more of this person's in this region. So there's no, you know, ganking of having a whole team sneak up on you out of nowhere. You know, as long as you're paying attention to the map, if people are coming, you're going to notice. Not to mention, you know, as far as map size goes, 4 times bigger than Skyrim. This is a big map, so you're not going to be bumping elbow to elbow with people every 5 minutes.
Wait. Excuse me? I didn't hear that part.
Yeah,
did they say 4 times? Yes. I don't remember that statement.
It's a very large map with several ecosystems kind of built into it. So, I mean,
well, I know that they were talking about moving from area to area now, yeah.
So, yeah, the map is gigantic. So, you know, it seems to be that if, you know, you want to avoid PvP, there's many avenues from which you can do so. Yeah, I did cover the ignoring as well. As far as dying, you don't lose any gear. You basically drop kind of your junk. So all, like, your items that you'd use to craft gear, you drop a little bit of money. Nothing too crazy. So they wanted to make dying not something that totally wrecks your time, but not being something so carefree that you didn't really have to care about dying at all. So it seems to be a good middle ground in the game. There is fast travel. You can fast travel to 2 points for absolutely free. That would be Vault 76. And to the closest point from which you died. Those are 100% free fast travels at all times. If you want to fast travel, say, across the map, you're going to have to pay out what they called a small amount of caps. So, not going to break your bank. The game chat is proximity-based in-game, so you can only hear people, obviously, nearby you. And I'd say one of the bigger things is how VATS works. VATS is in real time, obviously, because this is an online multiplayer game. You can't obviously slow down the entire game when one person goes in VATS. VATS starts out as strictly only targeting the target as a whole. There is a perk upgrade to where you can make it more like traditional VATS, to where you can target individual body parts. But, however, your traditional VATS is basically going to be, you know, not nearly as good as saying just shooting the person. So it's kind of more, VATS is now more towards people that necessarily aren't that really great at shooters. It's really a good kind of helper. But traditional VATS, as you know it, I would say is basically dead. Maybe not 100%.
Are you okay
dead
with calling it VATS and having it not be VATS?
I mean, like I said, what's, when you get VATS. The perk, I mean, when you get the perk to target the body parts, it's still VATS. But even then, like, I'm okay with playing this like a normal
shooter. Of... I mean, I understand that there's no way you can slow it down. It's just, it's impossible. There'd be no way you could pull that off. But they, I don't know. I guess there is no middle ground. I guess this is the middle ground.
I think
it's fine, too. I guess it's just, it's weird to me that they're still calling... They can't do this in five. They can't remove.
Oh no! I mean, if it's a single player game, it's going to go back to VATS. I mean, VATS is never going to go away completely. I don't believe so, at all.
I hope so. I hope this isn't them moving in a direction. I assume it's just because of the multiplayer aspect.
I mean, yeah. I think that's just they're going to take some liberties with this one since it is an online multiplayer game, but. Those liberties, I don't feel like are going to dictate the future of these single-player games whatsoever. Sony, commemorating its 500 million PlayStation systems sold, that's across, obviously, all of their consoles, is releasing a limited edition PS4 Pro. It is a crystal blue color. It will be limited to 50,000 units total, so similar to the 20th anniversary console. It is includes a different from the standard PS4 Pro. It will have a 2 terabyte hard drive as opposed to the standard 1 terabyte, and it will retail for $499. Now, to go along with this, they are also releasing a limited edition DualShock 4, also in the crystal blue. It'll be the same one that comes with the console as well, and same color scheme they're doing for the wireless headset. Now, those both will be sold separately. The system doesn't include the headset, obviously. And those will be the standard prices as those, $65 for the controller, $100 for the wireless headset. The pre-orders will start on August 24th for the console, and the controller and headset will be available in early September at all your various retailers, you know, Amazon, Best Buy, GameStop, etc. But... it's pretty. I'm not going to lie. As far as limited edition goes,
it's good looking.
Oh, I like that color.
They're really starting to pump out a lot of, like, the Spider-Man one looks good, too.
I'm in on that controller,
but they're really...
Count me in for one of those.
No. Yeah, I would agree. They're really starting to pump these out, though. Do you think that this is them boosting their numbers before PS5?
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, yeah, they're kind of doing that, but you look at past... iterations.
Xbox,
I mean,
did the same thing,
like,
with at the
so
end of
many.
The 360 they pumped out Halo,
I mean,
and the Fallout ones
editions
and
of the 3DS.
It just feels sure like towards the end of every console cycle they do like the themed consoles.
Well, I mean,
for
to be
like
fair,
3DS
put out two limited editions in their first year. There was a Splatoon one and a Super Mario Odyssey within the
well that's on them for not months. I mean, good for them, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know
I
how well Switch is doing.
Just,
I honestly haven't looked at the numbers.
I guess this is a significant
how well is Switch doing?
Event. I know it's. I believe it's already passed Wii U's total lifetime sales, so I'd say it's doing fairly
well. Oh, good
well.
For them. All right. All right.
Not the highest bar.
It just seems
still.
Like it's. Well, that's fair, yeah. I feel like just this is a sign. I mean, we knew anyway, because we've even had top fives about our predictions. Of, yeah. I just feel like this is one of the signs of, like, you know,
yeah, I guess,
hey, we're
so.
Getting ready
you
to
know.
Move on soon.
So, yeah, some of the ones, like, okay, yeah, you know, God, they seem to be hitting all their major, like, first-party games. Like, okay, God of War had one. Spider-Man had one. I'm going to guess.
They did a Star Wars one. Know, that's what I
yeah,
have.
I guess Star Wars wasn't, like, a lead
got the
for
Destiny
them. But
one.
Yeah, Destiny.
Yep,
again,
that's true. You have the Destiny
but
one?
Lead one. But, you know, I'm sure for... Well, probably maybe Last of Us 2. I'm sure there's probably going to be a limited edition console for that.
Is Last of Us 2? That'll probably be the end of this cycle. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah.
Kind oh,
of
yeah,
yes,
they'll definitely
know,
be a Last of Us 2.
I mean, they always look good. I
mean, we have another year to two, or well, 2 years, plus, maybe a little bit more than that.
And plus with ones like this, PS4. Where it's like, oh, we're only making 50,000, each one's individually numbered. That's going to bring the collectors out, too. So I'm sure they're going to have no trouble selling.
That's true. And it's $100 more, too. So.
Right. Dark Souls Remastered, touching back on what Jake was talking about playing the game earlier, finally has a date for the Nintendo Switch release. That date will be October 19th. That also will coincide the same day that the Solaire Amiibo will be releasing. So, pretty 5-month delay between...
I want that. I don't own a Nintendo console of any kind. I want that
I'm in,
shit.
I'm in on that, you know. amiibo as well. So yeah, that's an easy one. But significant, pretty notable delay. I mean, 5 months between the every other version and Switches. So hopefully, you know, keep my fingers crossed that that version runs well.
But, are you surprised?
I mean, no, yes, no. I mean, that one is significantly different performance-wise than every other one. So yeah, I can see why it needs a little
I assume
more
it's
going to
be the 360 and PS3
oh,
version.
Yeah, I mean, they already said it's like going to that... be 30 locked at 30. The graphics will not be significantly improved. Like, yeah, that's going to be more like...
At least they get Dark Souls on the Switch.
It's Dark Souls on a Nintendo platform.
Can you play with motion controls?
They didn't say, but...
That would be hilarious.
Shit, no.
That would be so funny.
That seems crazy.
I mean, it seems crazy. Well, I guess unless you... nobody's going to play that on a regular fucking Wii Switch controller, right? They're going to use, like, a Pro or something like that?
I mean, I'm sure it's reasonable to play on the Joy-Cons, but, I mean...
I guess.
If I picked it up, yeah, I'd probably only be playing with the Pro controller.
Yeah.
And our final bit of news this week comes from a long dormant franchise, Time Splitters. The rights to this game has been picked up by Deep Silver, who has been recently picking up some of these kind of old, kind of maybe not necessarily dead, but dormant franchises. They also, in recent years, they bought Volition as well, who is obviously the team behind games like Saints Row. They also picked up the rights to the Metro franchise. So they do have a pretty decent stable of franchises under them. They did not.
Deep Silver's been around for a while, too.
They did not explicitly come out and say that they're making a new game, but, I mean, they're going to be making a new game. I mean, you wouldn't buy a dead franchise if you weren't planning on reviving it, so.
I'm cool with
it. Look forward to
that. Could be fun.
Time Splitters 3? I don't even know where they stopped at. Like, I never played Time Splitters.
Yeah,
this series is foreign to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, 2 was so good. That was a really fun game. It was. I think this will be 3, yeah, unless there was some sort of spinoff.
So, yeah. Keep your eyes peeled for a new Time Splitters in the future. And that will wrap up our news this week, leading us right into our top 5, which we said last week we were going to do. And here it is. Top 5 favorite Mel Brooks movies. Feel like these are going to be
I like Ben's prediction of
similar.
Well, Ben's what's your prediction, Ben?
We're all
is that
have the same
all
top
of
four.
Our
guaranteed
top 4. Okay, so everybody's really okay. Everybody's going to have an outlier, you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Everyone's going to have a different. All
right, so I'll go first.
All right.
I'll go first and we'll see what we have here. My order's going to horrify both of you, but this goes in order of what I love from Mel Brooks. All right. So number 5 is Blazing Saddles.
You're done.
Yeah. See?
My
I told you.
Goodness.
Disqualified.
I told you.
5?
I know. It should have been. Well, I see. The other places hold a really special plate in my heart. See? The other ones hold a very special place in my heart. This is all based on how many times I've watched these movies. And
I think you need to watch Blazing
Saddles. So what do you want to do? What? Well, yeah. Everybody knows what these movies are, right? This is him satiring the American West, essentially, with a lot of racism in there. And it's funny as fuck. Yeah. He does the Wild World of Sports thing. The World War II thing with the German army. There's a lot of really great music in this movie. That's one of the big things that stands out to me when they do the Count Basie Orchestra. That there's a lot of really... great shit in that movie. I don't know how much you want to talk about these movies because, like, everybody's seen them, right? I don't know what I should say.
Right, yeah. It's not really much you have to go on as far as telling us what the movies are about.
Number 4 is Robin Hood Men in Tights. This is essentially a parody on Robin Hood. I don't know. It incorporates a lot of other
you
stuff.
Sure?
The thing I love about Mel... What?
You sure?
Am I sure? Yeah. The thing I love about Mel Brooks is he kind of like a Tarantino style thing is where he ties together a lot of gags throughout all of his movies that like you can find in each one. And Robin Hood has a lot of them just because they were that was kind of towards the end of a lot of his directorial stuff. And it's also Cary Elwes, who I think needs to be in more stuff. But I think he's an underrated actor. I think he gets typecast a lot, but I think he's an underrated actor. Number three is Young Frankenstein. This is, I mean, I think most people love this because Gene Wilder is fucking amazing, and he's just amazing in everything he does. He's what makes this movie for me. I don't know what else to say about this movie besides the fact that I just love Gene Wilder, and I'll watch him in anything. Like, seriously, when I think about Young Frankenstein, all I see is Gene Wilder's face. Like, I love him so much as an actor.
Let's not forget Terry Garrard was smoking hot in that movie.
That's true, too. Yeah. Where was that movie? What year was that movie made in?
74?
70s? I think it's 74. Okay, so it was early 70s. Yeah, all right. Number two is History of the World Part 1. This is one of those movies I watched as a kid a lot because my dad was a bad dad and he let me watch a lot of movies that I probably shouldn't have when I was really young. But he loved this movie. I love this movie. This is the satire on a lot of different things. A lot of the big epic hits, Ten Commandments, 2001. It hits on most of the big age, Stone Age, Roman Empire, Inquisition, Spanish Inquisition, French Revolution. It does the Ten Commandments. It does the Last Supper. It does, I mean, it also parodies a lot of the genres, like I said, of the big movies that happened at those times. And it's kind of Mel Brooks' spin on them, which he does for almost everything he does anyway. And number one, because this holds a special place in my heart, and it probably isn't number one. Blazing Saddles should have been way higher. Young Frankenstein probably should have been a lot higher. But my number one is Spaceballs, just because I can quote this movie probably from beginning to end. Every character is super memorable. I love Star Wars so much, given my name especially. And, I don't know. It holds a very, very special place in my heart. It's probably not his number one, but for me, it's his number one. Also, I miss Rick Moranis as an actor. Good on him, man, for dropping out and taking care of his kids and stuff like that. But damn, I miss him as an actor. Yeah, I really, really do.
Old enough by now. He can come back.
Yeah, but, well, yeah. I mean, I'm sure he could get a starring role anytime he wants, but he's been out for how long? I don't even remember what the last movie he did was.
Little Giants, maybe?
Yeah.
Dude, that was a great movie. I love Little Giants. Holy shit. That was a great movie. All right, so 5-1, Blazing Saddles, which I acknowledge should be higher. Young Frankenstein, Robin Hood, History of the World, and then it was the other way around, Robin Hood, and then History of the World, yeah, and then Spaceballs. Are you on to anything yet, Ben? Did I have most of the movies you assumed?
Well, yeah, you broke the prediction of the top four being the same with your Blazing Saddles hot take.
Oh, I thought you meant four of our movies were going to be the same.
Oh, no. I said our top four would be the same and our fifth would be the last.
I mean, I pro- what should have... So here's what should have been. It probably should have been Robin Hood at five. Then... Yeah, I guess Blazing Saddles would have been four for me. I can do it that way if that'll make your prediction easier for you.
We'll see what Mike has to say about that.
All right, let's go.
Who's going next?
You go, Mike. Let's see if you break my theory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll preface this by saying, like, I haven't watched any of these movies in, like, many years. So this is strictly going off of, like, feel and from what I remember. So I'm not going to have much to say about them at all. Number five is History of the World Part 1.
Broke my theory.
I'm sorry, Mike. Sorry. Number four is going to be Young Frankenstein. Number three will be Spaceballs. Number two will be Robin Hood, Men in Tights. And number one will be Blazing Saddles.
I think it's just your guys' generation, I think. That's what it is.
Blazing Saddles was the first one I ever saw.
You're not that much older than us.
And
like having Robin Hood so high.
I think it was really
good. Robin Hood was in the peak. It was really good. Dude, Dave Chappelle killed it in that movie.
Yeah. I don't know.
There's so many amazing jokes in that movie. Are you kidding me?
Most of his good ones.
Like, I...
Probably.
Yeah, I would say so. I can't think of anything.
Did he do the remake of The Producers? No, right?
I don't think so. I think, yeah, he only did.
He might have been involved, but I don't think he did.
But not, like, actively.
Well, he had to have been involved. They had to have been a producer based on writings by Mel Brooks, something like that, yeah.
But, yeah, that's...
Okay.
Quick and dirty, easy top five for me. So, number five, History of the World, Part 1. Number 4, Young Frankenstein. Number 3, Spaceballs. Number 2, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. Number 1, Blazing Saddles. All right, Ben,
show us the real way to make the top five of his movies, I guess.
I wanted to throw out a couple little shout-outs. My buddy Gerardo, he liked The Producers. That was his number five.
It's a good movie.
Yeah.
I haven't seen that one.
Great play, great movie. The remake was pretty funny with Broderick and Nathan Lane. It was a solid, yeah.
I do want to see that one. The other one was To Be or Not to Be. This wasn't a Mel Brooks directed film, but he starred in it. And it's a great movie set in World War II. Just a good film. Also, doing research, I learned that Mel Brooks served in World War II. So he has a first-hand experience on what it would
have
been
cool.
like.
That's cool. I know that. He's old as fuck, so I would assume so at this point. He's in his 90s.
So for me, number five is going to be High Anxiety. This is just Brooks's take on Hitchcock films. And it's like Mike said, I haven't seen this one in a very long time, but this one's a lot of fun. Number four for me, Spaceballs. So many memorable quotes in this one. I think this was probably my first Mel Brooks film that I saw. Because it, and I will mention this here with my number three. Number three is Young Frankenstein. I saw this when I was really young, and there's so many jokes that go over your head. Because there are so many dick jokes in this movie that you just don't pick up on when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's rated PG, though.
All of his movies are rated PG, I think.
Blazing Saddles is rated R.
Maybe. Well, that has a lot of... Okay, that has a lot of over-the-top shit. That's true.
Yeah, I don't think they get away with it.
Spaceballs is PG, though, and there's sex scenes in that movie.
Was there sex scenes in... Oh, there was. When
Mel Brooks is having a three-way. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a lot of dick jokes in that one, too, now that I think about it. He likes dick jokes. Number two, Blazing Saddles.
He likes dick jokes and Jewish humor.
Yeah.
That's his kit. That's his thing.
Yeah, Blazing Saddles is just Cleavon Little, Gene Wilder. Probably one of the best duos in a long time. I don't think that movie gets enough credit for those two just kind of tag team in that whole film. And then Harvey Korman as Hathi Lamarr is just one of the greatest villains of all time. Number one, though, History of the World, Part One.
Wow.
I can almost recite this movie from heart, songs and all. It's just insane how hilarious this movie is, and just going from the Roman Empire to the French Revolution, there's just so many hilarious bits throughout, bringing back jokes. Just all around fun. And another movie that is probably rated PG, but should be, because
probably, yeah,
just swear words and the
just, that movie never overstays its welcome in its parts. Like, each little section is just long enough to make you laugh, and then it moves on.
Like this and Blazing Saddles would be so hard to make today. For all,
you couldn't make it. No way.
History of the World Part 1 would probably be harder to make just because it's, like, segmented.
Not just that, just the... I was watching
it
a couple weeks ago.
Well, they can't do that kind of shit now.
Well, it was the one that got me was the scene with... it was, you know, when he's at the palace doing his stand-up routine for the emperor.
yeah.
The little crier guy next to the emperor, you know, is... very effeminate, but they kept calling him faggot throughout the whole movie. And it's like, you could never do that today.
No. Well, no there's way. All, yeah. The dialogue is very 80s because that's it. You can't do that kind of shit today.
Oh, yeah.
There you go. That's a better way to put it.
It was very nonchalant. They threw it out there like it was just any word in the English language.
Well, people used to throw out gay as just a regular verb or descriptor, anything. Just regular language.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Now it's almost never used in
5 to 10 years. I mean, everything's gay. I mean, these slippers are so gay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, whatever. So my top five. High Anxiety. Number 4, Spaceballs. Number 3 is Young Frankenstein. Number 2 is Blazing Saddles. And number 1 is History of the World, Part 1.
All right. And just like that, that is going to do it for this week's episode. Jake, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch at Fett the Assassin.
Ben, where can they find you on the internet?
You can find me on Twitter and Twitch at TheLeroyOG.
And you can find me on Twitter at JustSurvive. And on Twitch at The Just Survive. You can follow the show on Twitter at NWMPod. You can also visit our website at NWMPod.com, which has links to all of our contact information, links to all of our past episodes. And, of course, you can subscribe to our show there on iTunes, on Google Play Music, on Stitcher Radio, or your podcast app of choice. And we always ask that you go and leave us a review and let us know what you think of the show. Because each and every week, we thank you for listening. And until next time, take care.
Peace.
See you.